Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Wow.
Hello and welcome to the Abroad Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan and out actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined, as always, by London's top Japan enthusiast, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how you doing?
I'm all right, mate. This is the first one we've done not in the same room for a long time. Since, I think, it is a bit, December.
Yeah, weird, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's been like 2 months now, so it's a little bit surreal. I must say, I sometimes feel like I do these podcasts better when I'm alone in a room and
How
you're
rude.
Not here. Maybe you're a little bit of a cheeky distraction, Pete.
I am. I'm quite the image. I'm quite the tall drink of water. Very distracting.
Quite the image. How are you doing, though? You're now back in the UK after a relatively lengthy and action-packed trip to Japan. How are you feeling?
I'm back. I've hit the ground running. I've hurt my neck. Everything's fine.
I hit the ground running with your dodgy
That's
neck.
How I hurt my neck. It's all good. I didn't get any jet lag. I don't know what that was all about, because I usually do get a lot of jet lag. All good. The flight back was lovely. ANA. I splurged it was like twice the amount of an economy ticket, but I did get business, which is nice. So I got the chance to try out the...
I know!
But it was only double the economy ticket, which, you know, is okay if it's your only trip. Because I was going to go out late last year, and I didn't. So I just thought, you know what? I'm due a double trip, and I spent a lot of time in really cheap hotels when I was in Japan. So I thought, you know what? I'm going to upgrade. And I had to go at the ANA, the
big
room,
spender.
And it was very good. A lot of room, big telly, amazing.
He sent me a photo, ladies and gentlemen, bragging from the room on his plane, his in first class.
It was
there. Brilliant. What was it like? So it's called the room.
Mm.
What does that mean?
Well, it's ANA's new business class kind of proposition. And I know people are probably sort of looking, oh, Pete, man of the people, letting everyone down. It's just... I spent a lot of time in capsule hotels, so I saved a lot of money when I was in Japan. So that, I suppose. So let's get that out of the way. Class denier, Pete Donaldson. But it's just a big, like, it's just a big telly and a load of room in the old on the old seat. So
it's called the room. What do you expect?
And I had to go via Frankfurt, so it wasn't ideal. It wasn't like it was a direct flight, so I had to cut my cloth accordingly there and change in Frankfurt, and it was quite a quick changeover. But everything worked very well. So if you're on like a kind of honeymoon or a trip of a lifetime kind of situation with getting out to Tokyo, ANA's new business class, The Room, via Frankfurt is very good.
And I
walked past first class.
Can you fit two people in the room?
You could do, probably, I reckon. But it wouldn't be very nice. You'd have to be very friendly with them.
Bit of crowded room, wouldn't it?
Bit of crowded room, yeah. But it's just, I think they call it the room because there's just like shutters so that you can shut yourself in. And it's just really easy to sort of just pretend like there's nobody out there, really. But it was very good. I walked past first class and it seemed pretty much the same, except the tellies were just bloody massive. I think just business class just means a bigger telly these days, honestly. But recommended.
Would you like fly it again? Money aside.
Money aside, I'll do a lot of stuff.
That's the stupidest question I've ever asked, given that the main factor in business class is a lot of money.
Yes.
I mean, money inside, would you do it again?
It is a bit pricey. It is a bit lush for me. I did feel like I was I shouldn't have been there. So maybe not. But Frankfurt's a nice airport. The people are nice there. The man took my hairspray off me, but did offer to spray my hair at the X-ray, which has amused me on the way into Japan. He was like, "I'm gonna have to take this off you, but do you want a quick spray?" And he just leaned over the X-ray machine and sprayed my hair, which really made me laugh.
Beautiful. The benefits of business class. You get some hairspray.
Men spraying your hair.
Before it gets taken off you. But of course, a smart move, given the coronavirus situation.
Yeah.
Not sitting in cattle class. So you can enjoy your private room with no coronavirus. I suppose, then again, probably something you'd have to worry about in general, given they are screening people at the moment.
Yeah, I think obviously Japan is actually quite white hot during the Ebola crisis and stuff like that. Mm. They were very, very hot at the airport. If you come from a country that is troubled, let's say, when it comes to stuff like that, they are very, very careful. And I think Japan's fared quite well compared to a lot of other countries that have the similar proximity to Wuhan and China in general, because they have been very careful. Flights, you can't get out of the country. It's a weird situation. I do worry for the people of China because heaven knows the country's political class don't necessarily always care about the welfare of the people, rather the outlook on the world, let's say, and what people...
Well, yeah, there was a situation, wasn't there? The doctor who broke the news of coronavirus died of the disease, and there's been journalists who reported it that were dragged off into the night, and that was the end of that.
Mm.
But obviously, you know, we've had a lot of messages and comments and questions from you guys about the coronavirus. Given Japan is, I think, the second worst affected country after China, although it's important to point out, of the 500 or so cases in Japan at the moment, about 450 of them are on the cruise ship from hell, the Diamond Princess ship, which is moored off the docks in Yokohama. Sounds like just about the worst cruise ride you could possibly have.
Yeah.
But today we thought we'd dedicate a little bit of time to talking about the coronavirus. And, you know, I've had a lot of people ask me if they should cancel their entire holiday coming up later this year because of it, which would be a terrible shame. And I think that would probably be a hasty... I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, Pete, you didn't cancel your holiday.
No.
Back when it was first spreading.
No.
Why did you not cancel your holiday, Pete?
Well,
why did you come to Japan?
Well, it was kind of at the peak,
I
would say. Because it was like, you'd say, 7 to 14 days into the crisis. And, I mean, the thing about Japan is everyone wears masks anyway. Trying to take a picture that's got facial recognition doesn't really work. If your camera has facial recognition, it doesn't work because everyone wears masks anyway. So yeah, there was a lot of masks. I think when Natsuki and his wife came down to Sapporo, they were just constantly wearing masks. I think sometimes with English speaking Japanese, I can't understand what people are saying when they're wearing masks. Like the air hostess who was looking after me in my room, she had a mask on.
Bragging about the room again.
And I couldn't understand. And I couldn't understand what she was saying. I could because I couldn't see her lips move. So there was a lot of weird back and forth. So yeah, everyone wears masks. So I imagine that probably helps halt the spread of any kind of airborne disease, airborne toxic event.
It's funny you should bring up the mask thing. A minute ago, literally like 5 minutes before we started doing this podcast, I ran down to the nearby 7-Eleven, got a little bit of coffee and some fried chicken, which was rather good, a little bit oily. Fried chicken from 7-Eleven, right? You bite into it and it explodes in a sea of oil. It tastes good, but you've got to be bloody careful, so bear that in mind. Anyway, but the guy at the counter, he was wearing a mask.
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh, this is a YouTuber." And I went, What? Sorry, I don't know what you just said. He went, oh, Yeager! And he sort of, again, I didn't know what he was saying. And he pulled down his mask. He was like, are you the YouTuber? And I was like, yeah, I'm a YouTube guy. Well, hey. And he was like, oh, right. And he put the mask back on. And went, oh, yeah. You're right. You literally can't work out what people are saying with those masks on, particularly Natsuki.
Yes.
Don't know what he's on about. And you're right. He did have one when he came to Sapporo. And while we're on the subject of Sapporo, though, that was one of the worst affected places by tourism. So obviously, unsurprisingly, given that China banned group tours leaving China, right, and Japan is the main recipient of Chinese tourists, I think it gets the lion's share of tourists leaving China, Japan and Thailand. And yeah, there was, what were the figures? There was the drop was incredible. Like, I think Sapporo Snow Festival last year, it saw 2.7 million tourists. It was the biggest numbers that they've had. It was a record year. And this year, in the absence of Chinese tourists, there were 700,000 fewer tourists at the Sapporo Snow Festival, which, in a terrible way, it kind of benefited us, I felt, because it wasn't so crowded, was it?
No, it's quite easy to get around, I thought. Very well organised.
Yeah,
it was beautifully done.
So we it sounds selfish and awful, but we did kind of benefit from it in our own weird way. But I do feel bad for the for these companies in Sapporo and across Japan, who are seeing a massive drop in numbers. And in fact, the Japanese government has kind of outlined a $100 million package of emergency funds to bail out small to medium businesses that are struggling with the massive drop in tourists. And 30% of Japan's tourists come from China. You know, that's a huge number. So I do worry about Japan and its economy in that regard. So that's been the worst kind of the worst effect of the coronavirus so far. But really, you know, a lot of people have been asking me, what is it like here in Japan at the moment? And really, nothing has changed. You do see, as Pete said, there's more masks on. People do have more masks than usual. And there's a lot of those alcoholic sprays. I don't know what you call them. What do you call them, Pete?
It's just alcohol gel, isn't
spray.
It? Yeah. I was using a lot.
Yeah, it tastes great.
But I think I was consciously washing my hands a little bit more. I'm not a germaphobe.
Oh, I definitely am, yeah.
I'm not like... I never use alcohol spray, alcohol gel, but every time I sort of walk
just in
past
the mouth.
One... I was in Akihabara, and obviously playing like a lot of video games in the arcades and stuff. Whenever I go to an arcade in Japan, I play one game and one game only, Winning 11 2016, which was the last iteration I think that arrived in the arcade. It's the Pro Evolution series, and they don't just have like a little joystick, they have a little USB connected sort of PlayStation controller you can play it with, which is quite nice. But obviously that's going to be riddled with filth, so I was quite diligent with washing my hands every time I left and entered somewhere where, you know, I was really getting down and dirty with something. Down and dirty with a controller in Akihabara.
Sounds absolutely disgraceful.
Well, on the way to... on the last day I sort of left you, Chris, I went to Akihabara to pick up a couple of things, and then I walked through Ueno Park. I'd never walked through Ueno Park, like with the... it's got a little kind of rivery sort of thing and a shrine. I'd never walked through there before. It was lovely.
Did you say a rivery sort of thing?
Like a rivery sort of thing. It's like Central Park, but with a Lido. I'd say it's more of a Lido than anything else. But it was but it was stunning. I'd never sort of seen it before. That part of Tokyo, I'd never sort of spent any time. But walking through it was genuinely lovely on the final day. Great way to end my holiday.
Yeah, no, it's a really nice park. The only time I ever walk through it is after a night out. For some reason, I always end up at Ueno Park. I think it's because when I first used to travel to Tokyo, inevitably you stay in Ueno just because it's cheap, right? So I'd go for drinks, go for a night out in Ueno, then wake up at like 9 a.m. in search of McDonald's or various fried foods to offset the terrible hangover. And Ueno Park was on my doorstep, and I would just wander around trying to get rehydrated, Bakari sweat in one hand, McMuffin in the other, and wander through it. It's a great park for hangover cures.
It's lovely.
So it's the best hangover cure in Tokyo. I mean, back on the subject of the coronavirus, I do wonder how much of it has been blown out of proportion to some extent. I mean, I read a report that over 80% of people that do catch it only have mild symptoms. There is a 2% mortality rate, and it seems to be affecting... the elderly population the most, people over 80. seem to be the ones succumbing to it.
Yeah,
not that makes it better.
No, I think as a province, it was an unhelpful province for it to happen in. It's very obviously very dense, but like SARS killed fewer people, but the mortality rate was a lot higher. I seem to recall. So
that's
I think maybe I think China is a global power. They need to be a bit more sensible about their disease control, and you just can't have your population, you know, living in those conditions that allow you to sort of allow things like that to spread. Not that anywhere else is immune to that kind of stuff.
Absolutely. And to go back to the figures, I think it was 74,000 confirmed infections and 2,000 people who have died as a result of the disease. But I guess, you know, it is pretty pervasive. It's on headlines around the world at the moment. I've had friends and family who never talk to me who are like, oh my God, you must be dead by now, Chris. You must have got this coronavirus. My dad's loving it. He's like, oh, ha, ha, look at you now in Japan. Look at you, you've got this now. I'm like, no, I haven't got it. It's fine. Like, 125 million people in Japan and about 400 people have it on a boat. And yeah, I do. You know, I expect the numbers will go up, probably peak in the next few weeks and then start to drop down like they did with SARS, just because we're leaving the winter season. It's not as cold anymore. And I don't think, you know, I don't think it'll be as bad people are imagining it will be.
As huddled together and stuff. And you know, and a lot of the reports in the West, there's a little bit of racism in there as well, the way that it's reported.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, it's been sad. I've heard in the UK that there's people over there who are kind of using it against people from East Asia in general.
Yeah, and like, you know, my parents are, you know, have similarly. Oh my God, you can't go to Japan. I was like, Mum, I live in Chinatown, in Piccadilly Circus. So like, mate, like, if I'm gonna catch it, I'm not gonna catch it. You know, I've probably already got it, so don't worry about it. You know what I mean? It's like it's just one of those things.
I hope that's how the conversation went. Don't go to Japan. And then you went, mate, I live in Chinatown.
I live in Chinatown, went, oh, mate. Yeah. I'm always rocking with the Chinese Chinatown.
That is what family dialogue in Hartlepool sounds like, ladies and gentlemen.
At such a difficult time, didn't it? Obviously, because it was Chinese New Year and everyone just, you know, scattered to the winds because they were all travelling. So that's why you saw so many people, so many cases sort of move so quickly. But it has been quite well contained. I think the authorities have done very, very well to contain it. Outside of China, probably. But China aren't... a kind of ruling with their iron fist on this one, I think.
Well, one of the most interesting things to come out of it is Kyoto has actually started doing a new tourism campaign. Now, obviously, we always talk about Kyoto, right? They always complain that there's a lot of over-tourism. There's too many tourists. And having been there and seen it and experienced it, yes, there definitely is. Like, Kyoto has been rammed. But actually, with the absence of Chinese tourists, they're really panicking now because they're losing a lot of money. A lot of businesses are facing severe problems.
So
they started a new tourism campaign to attract tourists during this outbreak, and it's called the Empty Tourism Campaign. They've started showing off places like Arashiyama Bamboo Forest, which is typically pretty busy and overcrowded, and they've just got pictures of no one there. And it's not just, to be fair, it isn't just Chinese tourists that are avoiding or not coming to Japan. Japanese tourists have been less likely to travel, and tourists in general, tourism in general is down across Japan as people shun the idea of travelling and staying indoors more. So Kyoto is panicking. They've released this empty tourism campaign. Now might be the best time, now more than ever, to visit places like Kyoto that are typically rammed and typically overrun with tourists. So take advantage of that. Take advantage of the coronavirus. And, you know, to everyone who's messaged me saying, should I cancel my trip? Should I, you know, not go to Japan this year? I'd say the opposite. I'd say now. Come to Japan now. While prices are cheaper, hotels are also cheaper, and places are just less busy. You can actually have parts of Japan to yourself in a way that you just can't really in recent years because of the tourism boom. So now's actually a really good time to visit Japan, unless the coronavirus gets, like, unless it really gets out of control. And obviously do keep an eye on it, as I intend to. Do follow the headlines and see what's going on. But Japan is very well equipped to handle it. Now's a great time to come visit. Maybe you should be coming back, Pete. So, yeah, hopping on the next flight,
virus
getting in the
tourism.
Room again.
Some kind of weird virus
yeah,
tourism.
Enjoy your time.
It's a strange...
Virus tourism.
It's a strange thing to say, but yeah, I don't know, man. I mean, Fukuoka and Kumamoto and all those places seemed a little quieter than I've seen before. Obviously, I've been in high season, and I've been when it's been a little warmer in October, and it was probably very, very cold. But people didn't seem to be out and about quite as much.
Yeah, I mean, I've felt that. I mean, I'm currently in Tokyo at the moment, and I went to Omotesando a minute ago.
Yeah.
A minute ago, an hour ago, 2 hours ago, 4 hours ago. Went for lunch. My concept of time, we all know, it's pretty
it's
awful.
Gone.
I did go there for lunch, and it wasn't as busy as usual. Mm. It was kind of cool. It was like, wow, I feel like I've got the shops to myself.
If you're in, London, by the way, there's an excellent coffee shop called Omotesando Coffee that's in near Oxford Circus. So there's a bit of a tip for you. Give it a go.
Well, I went to a really cool coffee shop, and I highly recommend it if you're in Tokyo. There's a really cool coffee shop chain called Streamer Coffee. And the one I went to in Omotesando, they've got three shipping containers. The coffee shop is really small, but it's quite tall, and they build it out of shipping containers, about
like
three
box park.
Shipping containers stacked upon one another. And it's
popular.
One of the coolest places I've been in a while, one of the coolest coffee shops I've visited. And if you want a nice coffee, Streamer Coffee, Omotesando, check it out.
Lovely.
It's amazing.
Job.
And that's not a sponsor from them, but that I've sneakily put in there. It is genuinely really good.
We did get, I noticed we did get a sponsor in for mobile.com, so we're advertising them. And I got really excited because I actually use that product when I go to Japan. I use that SIM card, so I was like, oh, wow, a sponsor that I've actually used before. Cool.
Oh, cool.
Lovely old job.
Nice one.
Yeah, Synergy, mate. Synergy.
There you go. Now, while we're on the subject of viruses and viruses in general, it's time to go to speedy vocabulary, speedy Japanese. Now, Pete, you've had an interesting week. Before you flew back to the UK in your wonderful first class business class cabin,
All right.
We did go fishing, didn't we?
Fishing, of all places.
Would you like to explain what happened?
I felt like I hadn't done much on my holiday. I'd seen, like, the Sapporo Snow Festival.
How dare you? We had an amazing time in Sapporo.
I know we did. I know.
I went to
Sapporo Snow Festival. I had a lovely time there. And then for about a week, I felt like I hadn't done much. And then on the last day, or the last 2 days, Chris and I met in the middle of nowhere near Sendai. Where was that place?
we met in Sendai in a blizzard, no less.
Yes, in a blizzard, and you drove me to some long forgotten part of the countryside near Sendai, and we bedded down for the night. I woke up at 4:30. We were in the reception at 5 o'clock in the morning, and Ryotaro was there, and he took us fishing. Well, not really fishing, but seaweed farming. We went out with a lot of seaweed farmers. It was fascinating and exhilarating and emasculating.
You've made it sound so random. You've made it sound so unbelievably random. They're basically, Ryotaro and I have been working on a new documentary on the tsunami. Obviously, the tsunami happened, it's about 9 years ago now, but it's in March. And so to commemorate the tsunami and the disaster, we are going around the coastline and interviewing businesses that have sprung up and kind of looking at ways that the tsunami impacted the region. And we thought we'd talk about fishermen. We thought we'd go out and meet some of the fishermen, given that they were one of the most affected sectors. A lot of fishermen lost their boats, their livelihoods, their jobs, their lives as well. So that morning we decided to take Pete, given that Pete had spent his entire holiday outside of Sapporo getting drunk in random bars in Fukuoka and sending me photos of him with a dog, no less, at a bar.
Lovely little dog.
I just got a photo on my phone, ladies and gentlemen, of Pete Donaldson sitting at a bar stool with a dog next to him and a drink in hand. Pete, not the dog.
Lovely.
It was all rather a bit weird. So I thought, well, we should probably do something a bit more cultural than that. And so we took Pete out. We did go, we went seaweed farming at 5 a.m, which is a little bit random. But you know what? It was bloody spectacular. The sunrise was so good. The boat ride was amazing. Only problem was I didn't sleep longer than about 5 minutes. It was one of those mornings, you know, when you've got to get up really early in the morning.
You were not a happy camper at all. And I'm not a non-morning person, but luckily the jet lag.
Well, you looked all right. You did all right. I was a wreck. We went to bed at like midnight. got up at 5 a.m. and in that space of time I had about 30 minutes sleep.
Yeah.
And I woke up, I got up and I felt like death.
You were ashen.
And I was awful. And like, when I don't sleep, my body just feels really numb. It's awful. I can't do it. But what a baptism of fire. You met Ryotaro for the first time at 5 a.m. in a hotel lobby and then went seaweed farming with him. Brilliant.
It was great. And the seaweed farmers, I think they do like seaweed farming around about this time of year. And a little bit later on in the year, they do is it oyster or scallop. They do scallop fishing. And then later on they've got a salmon farm as well. So, but it's all this kind of like holistic approach to it. They sell the seaweed to supermarkets, but they've also got a couple of restaurants, I think, in Tokyo. And they just deliver these big cases of seaweed that they've just collected out of the sea to the restaurants really, really quickly. So, yeah, same day. It's on your plate. It's incredible. Tasted really good.
Yeah, I saw you eat some. That's weird. As the boat was heading back inland, I saw you grab some and down it.
Chris had had no sleep. His sea legs were not on form, but I'd had a couple of hours, so I was all right. And I do come from a proud family of fish people. My dad was in the Navy, so I like to think I like to pretend I've got sea legs, but I probably don't. But it was a lovely way to start the day, and then we just sort of headed back, and it was like, you know, 9 a.m, and I'd already achieved so much, and I was like, wow, this is what morning people do. They do things in the morning.
I don't remember what else we did that day. Oh no, we went to an abandoned building.
We did go to an abandoned building, which again, fascinating.
So another part of our documentary, at the start of the documentary, we're covering the town of Minami-Sanriku, one of the worst affected towns by the tsunami, completely wiped off the map. If you look at a picture of it, it looks like an atomic bomb went off basically and just wiped it off. But there's one building that is still standing, completely abandoned, completely destroyed, and we went inside it and it was creepy as hell. Pete found a dead bat, and he found like an abandoned film room where there was cameras and things. Basically, this building was used for wedding ceremonies, wasn't it, Pete?
Yeah, it was
people
a wedding.
Go there for weddings.
It was a wedding venue, and on the day the tsunami hit, 300, I think, mainly elderly people were on the third floor, five, six story building, and the manager, I think, used to be a fisherman. He was very aware of what the sea can do, and him and his security team basically physically prevented the elderly people from escaping the actual building itself, and got them on the roof, and the water went up all five stories onto the roof, so the people were knee deep in it still, but this brave man's actions managed to save nearly 300 people and two dogs as well, which is very exciting. And so the whole of this wedding venue is like this kind of it's kind of like testament to the manager and the strength of the building and the resilience of the town. Whereas everywhere else in the actual town is getting terraformed, so it's a bit higher and more resilient to the waters. This kind of building is standing as a sort of a testament, almost like a shrine to the ravages of a thing. But just walking around, the tsunami obviously wrecked all of the building. You know, the toilets, the sinks, the places where people used to check in and check out for their working days are still there. You know, pencils are kicking around. There's typewriters. There's old film cameras. A lot of bats everywhere. And it's all
horrible.
I do love an abandoned building in Taichung in Taiwan. There's a nightclub that burned down about 10 years ago, and they've sort of let that sort of go to rack and ruin, and sort of people have taken over. But just seeing a building that nature has taken over a little bit is I do find fascinating. And obviously in this case, it was a happy story rather than a sad one.
Yeah, and I mean, that's going to be the opening to the documentary that's coming out in about 2 or 3 weeks now. And it's going to be quite the opening, you know, going around this building. I think, if you've been listening to this wondering what it looked like, you're in for a treat. It looked pretty haunting, but as Pete said, it is a happy story. Mm. Well, for that building, not necessarily for the town, anyway.
So,
we had quite the morning.
Yeah, watching Chris try and fly a drone in gale force winds was interesting, I seem to recall.
Yeah, it was a super windy day. I bought a brand new drone, the Mavic, what's it called? The DJI Mavic Mini.
Right. I don't even know the name of it, but it was a really small drone. Yeah, somehow it survived the gale force winds and held its own. And again, that footage will be in the documentary. But going back to Speedy Japanese,
yes,
which is how this all began, this segment, let's do some words. Do you know what the word is to fish, given that we talked about fishing?
Ooh, I don't
What's
know.
What's the noun or verb to
fish? Sakana, so... Sakana. Sakana. I don't know.
It is tsuri. Tsuri.
Ah, tsuri.
I always remember it of Tom Cruise's daughter, Suri Cruise.
I'm going on the Suri Cruise.
Katie Holmes, Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose, good way. You could think of boat, cruise, fishing. Tsuri. It's spelled like T-S-U-R-I, tsuri.
Right.
And it is a verb if you add suru. So tsuri suru. It's a tough little tongue twister there. But if you want to say, to go fishing, you could say tsuri ni iku. Tsuri ni iku. So in your case, tsuri ni ikimashita. I went fishing.
Lovely.
That'd be a useful one.
Tsuri ni ikimashita.
And now for the most difficult word of all. Do you know what virus is in Japanese? I have trouble pronouncing this one.
I don't know.
Well, I'll give you a clue. They use... It's a guide Igor. It's a foreign borrowed word.
Yeah.
So it sounds like the real thing.
Virus?
It sounds like the English. Yeah, that's close. It's so obviously they don't have a V sound in Japanese. They use a B. But for some reason, they've been really annoying, and it's pronounced it with a U instead of a V. So it's virus. Virus.
Virus.
Like U-I-R-U-S-U. Virus.
Virus.
Nightmare.
Virus. I've got a virus. Help, I've
Corona
got a
virus.
Corona virus. Yeah. Good Lord. I just shout
coronavirus.
Interesting.
Yeah, Corona. Corona death. Nightmare. And finally, sightseeing. Given that you did a lot of sightseeing and met a lot of dogs at various bars.
Yeah.
Do you know what sightseeing is?
Inu, dog. Kanku.
Right, good.
Kanku is to sightsee, I believe.
Kankor. Yeah, to sightsee. So, yeah, they're all connected. So to sightsee, you can say kankō suru. Tourist, you just basically add the kyaku on at the end, which means customer. So kankō kyaku, tourist.
Kankō kyaku.
Yeah, you could say if you want to ask a question, you could be like doko kankō shimashita ka? Doko kankō shimashita ka? Where did you go sightseeing?
Right,
and that's quite a common word. I think it's one of the first Japanese words you learn if you start learning the vocab for JLPT 5 N5. Love it. But there you go. Three valuable words to your list.
Yeah. Very nice.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? Mine's pretty low after coming back from the craziness of WrestleMania, too many body slams and all that. And I'm pretty jealous of my co-host Chris, who seems to have been exploring Japan's most isolated hotel. He's definitely winning in the relaxation race, but I'm determined to catch up with him. It can be easy to get swept up in social gatherings and spread ourselves too thin, but with therapy, you can learn to prioritize your time and recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/Japan today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Japan.
Shall we get onto some emails?
Yes, let's turn our attention to the fax machine. What we got from Trev?
We got an email from Trev. Trevor from Vancouver here. Hello, Trev. My wife and I listen to the podcast whenever we're driving around together, but we've noticed that that getting rid of change comes up quite a bit. We've had the same problem too. But on our last trip to Japan, we found a solution, although it's only really an option while in Japan or if you're planning on returning and having have a Suica card. On the last trip, we discovered that there were machines in Haneda Airport in the lower floor that you could dump all of your change into and then load it into your Suica card. This really helped us since we both have one and we try and come back to Japan as often as possible. Now, our change will just get us a couple of trips on the subway, but still, it's pretty good, isn't it? I bet they probably have these machines elsewhere as well, but haven't looked into it. Anyways, I hope this helps some of you out there. Keep up the great work and congratulations on 2 years doing the podcast, guys. It's been an emotional 2 years, Trev, but thank you for your email. I do that quite a lot, the old Suica card. The only problem with Suica is you, unless it's you're in Tokyo or Osaka, the use of it can be limited, I always find, with Suica. There are other cards, though, aren't there? Passmo seems a bit more ubiquitous, I've always found.
No, you can actually use Suica everywhere, to be honest.
Can you?
You can use it
maybe
for
on
everything.
The tubes. Maybe on the tubes. I know you can use Suica in pretty much every shop. Every 7-Eleven, every Family Mart, you can use Suica. But I always find on the tube, or maybe I just don't have any money on my card. But yeah, bang all your cash on Suica. Probably that one, isn't it? Probably maybe me being an absolute idiot.
I think when I first got here, I don't think you could use it everywhere. I think you had to choose between Passmo and Suica. But now, they're fine. My Suica card, I use it for everything, no matter where I am. If I'm in Sendai, Tokyo, whatever. It's great.
Like,
you can buy stuff at vending machines. You can hop on the train.
Mm.
It costs 500 yen. You can get it from any kind of Suica machine, any station. Highly recommend getting one, because who the hell wants to buy individual tickets for every train ride? And yeah, good point about the change. Like, at the end of a holiday, and in just general daily life here, I've got so much fucking coins everywhere.
Absolutely.
The only way you can really spend 5 yen or 1 yen coins, I tend to find at convenience stores. Best place to do it. That's where I use all my coins, buying like stuff. But yeah, great place to like load all those annoying 10 yen coins. You can just stick them in the machine at a train station and put them on your Suica card, and then you've just got some credit on it. And that is a great way of turning all that change and all those coins into something that's actually usable, and you can take it with you in your pocket. So yeah, good little life hack there, Trev. Good luck. Well
thanks,
done,
Trev.
Got one from Anne from Norway. He says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. First off, you're one of my favourite podcasts. I listen to you guys at work, which is super chill and perfect for when I'm animating. My question is, what are your tips for not feeling overwhelmed upon arriving in Tokyo? I'm going there this spring, and I'm worried that once I land, I'll feel like I don't have enough time to experience everything. Thanks for providing me with good laughs from your Norwegian friend, Anne." That's a good one. Mm. Overwhelmed. How do you get over feeling overwhelmed, Pete?
Well, when I'm walking around Akihabara looking at the electronics, obviously there's a big culture of drawing manga and anime. And so you see a lot of, in these electronic shops, those like sort of Wacom tablets where you can draw animation and draw cartoons and stuff. When I look at those and I look at all the buttons on the Photoshop, I think that's quite overwhelming. So I think just take it a day at a time. Just have a roll around. You'll have a lovely old time, Anne. And you're coming from Norway, so you'll probably be able to get a direct flight. So a lovely old job with Norwegian.
Pete Donaldson sponsoring every airline in the business.
Yeah.
I don't really know how to get over feeling overwhelmed. You just have to... I mean... Just try and make the most of your holiday, really, and write out a list of all the stuff you want to do, you know, make a little bucket list and then tick it off as you go. But I don't know. I mean, the thing is about Japan, I don't think I've ever met someone who's come to Japan for 2 weeks and then left and not felt like they needed to come back and see more.
Yeah.
And what I will say is, if you do feel overwhelmed, just think, well, I can always come back again. And
not gone anywhere,
with Norwegian Air... The prices are cheap and reasonable.
They are. Thank you, Norwegian Air.
Just come again, Anne. Just fly over again. We've got one from James from London. That's where you are, Pete. It says, "Hi, Chris and Pete. First of all, congratulations on reaching 2 years of the podcast. You both brought me hours of entertainment, and I hope that continues for a long time to come. It was a pleasure to meet Pete in the shop I work at just before his trip to Japan.
Ah.
And I'm still hoping to bump into Chris next time he's in London. My question is this. From your experience of Japan, what do you think the rest of the world should take and learn from the culture? For example, I wish public places in the UK were kept as clean as what Japan is. Thanks for everything you do. Keep up the great work. James from London." Where'd you meet him, Pete?
I met him in Game. Lovely chap. I do a few podcasts. So, if somebody says, "Oh, listen to your podcast," I'm like, "Oh, I don't know which one." But it was, it was Abroad Japan. And he was bloody lovely. Great handshake. Really friendly chap.
A great handshake.
And I was just perusing the Switch games for something to entertain me. I do it every time I go on holiday. I'm like, I'm going to buy a new Switch game. I'm going to play it on the plane. And then I just sleep because I'm tired.
And then you sleep in the room.
It was, lovely chap. So well done, that man, for being lovely.
What I've learned today, ladies and gentlemen, is that Pete Donaldson will judge you on your handshake. So if you do run
into
Pete,
really don't.
Be careful.
I think anybody who worries about handshakes and firm handshakes are complete and utter pony. Absolute nonsense.
Well, that's one difference in the Japanese and British culture.
Yeah.
You don't handshake as much. Yeah. Lots of bowing instead.
That's true.
There you go. That's a good question, though. Really good question. What do you think, Pete? What do you think the rest of the world should take and learn?
I'm going to say
goddamn
train travel.
Train travel?
I sent a video of me, admittedly, again, in the opulent surroundings of Grand Class. I wanted to try it from Sendai to London. And I know you've been on Grand Class recently, Chris, so you can't give me pelters. one step up from the green car. I had a JR pass. That took me around, but there was the opportunity to try the Grand Class. So for a little bit extra, I managed to upgrade my green car pass to a Grand Class thing from Sendai to London. And oh my days, almost like flatbeds. Bloody woman serving you sake and bloody bento boxes, and oh my days, it was just incredible. So I wish the trains were on time. I wish the people were polite. I wish it was a pleasant experience. But England and Britain in general just can't simply get its trains right.
Yes, I mean, yeah, I guess so. That's the thing. I travel around Japan relentlessly, often between Tokyo and Sendai, and I ride the bullet train. It's a 90-minute journey, and in the UK, you know, to do that route so often wouldn't be fun. But because the bullet trains are so beautiful. The seats are big and comfortable. The scenery is nice. I suppose that's not a criticism about England there, but, like, you know, the trains are bloody good, and I feel like, why don't we have them? Get them. Mm. Somebody get the bullet trains to the UK. Make it happen. And also, actually, to be a bit more serious and have one good answer there, that from me anyway, I would say I like the sense of respect people have for one another in Japan. You know, in the UK, we judge people on class a little bit. You know, we turn our noses down at the working class sometimes, yeah. Or, you know, people can be quite snobby. Whereas in Japan, there seems to be a consistent sense of respect across all jobs, across all classes. They're way more respectful, I find. Although when it comes to gender, not so much. And they can do a lot to learn from us there. We've got one from Evan from California. It says, hey guys, my name is Evan, I'm from California. Listen to your podcast, one of my favourite things to do while at my job, deburring sheet metal.
That sounds loud.
Deburring is?
That sounds loud.
Fun and loud.
So maybe you shouldn't have burred it in the first place. Maybe you shouldn't have burred it in the first place, then you don't have to deburr it, honestly. Oh dear.
I have learned a new word today, deburring. I love the podcast, and I've listened to your entire catalogue twice. That is dedication.
Wow.
Thank you very much, Evan. This question is for Chris. Have you ever bumped into your former students since you stopped teaching, or have any of them come across your channels or podcast? I'm curious to know, since watching your latest video, about your time as an English teacher. Many thanks, Evan from California. P.S. Thanks to Pete for helping me understand English accents. It's because of you I feel like I've learned the accent. There you go, Pete.
Well,
delivering educational language value.
Well, we do have two very different accents, I guess, haven't we?
We do. Mm. But which is better? Let us know in the comments. I do run into my students quite often. Sometimes it's awkward, sometimes it's fun. I remember the time that you were over here, Pete, and you and I went to Sakata, and we went out with Natsuki and Yuki and some other guys. Mm. We went to a snack bar to have a bit of a drink, do some karaoke, and as I was going in through the door, my old student, the school president of the school that I went to, he walked past and was like, oh, Chris, what are you doing here? And it was a bit awkward. That was awkward. My students spot me going into a snack bar. And
Lovely. Actually...
Because there's no jobs over in Yamagata, everybody just goes to Sendai, so I do run into them quite often. And it's fine, but that's never know what to say.
I never know
what their names are.
How old?
Because I've forgotten them all. It's really awkward. They go, do you remember me, Chris? And I go, yeah. And then that's basically how the conversation
ends. And they say it in terrible English. They probably don't have the words to ask you stuff in English because of your terrible teaching skills.
How dare you? But yes, a fair point. Got one from Sarah. I'll let you read this one because I've just realised I've stolen all the questions this
week. Sorry. Sarah from Portugal. Hello, Sarah. Beautiful name. Gouveia. Hi, Chris and Pete. Congratulations on the podcast. Really brightens my work afternoons every week. Oh, stop, Sarah. Chris, I saw your last video with the Haunted Inn, and I really enjoyed it. Japanese culture and creative content often have very interesting spiritual elements. Do you plan to explore more haunted places in the future? Is this an interesting story, or is there any interesting story or experience you'd like to share? What about you, Pete? Cheers and continue your great teamwork. If you ever come to the Madeira Islands, Portugal, on your travels, I would be thrilled to be your local guide and show you around my home island. Madeira is supposed to be beautiful. Home of Cristiano Ronaldo, of course.
Wow. I'd love to go there.
And his
abs. Let's do it. Mm. Let's do an offshoot of the Abroad Japan podcast abroad in Madeira.
Yeah.
I would love to do more haunted stuff. I guess in some ways the aforementioned documentary where Pete and I went round this empty abandoned building that had been destroyed by the tsunami, that was kind of a little bit haunted and creepy. It's important to point out Pete isn't actually in the documentary, and neither is Ryotaro, unfortunately.
I am trying to keep it focused on the
stories rather than having some banter.
I am stomping about.
Yeah, you can probably hear Pete in the background breaking things and rummaging through dustbins. I would love to, though. I really enjoy it. So we had a video out last Sunday where Ryota and I went to a haunted traditional inn. It wasn't that scary, but it was kind of fun. And of course the scariest place we did was the haunted abandoned tunnel on Journey Across Japan with myself and Joey. And I really enjoyed it. I do enjoy going to these places, mainly because I enjoy filming it and trying to kind of edit it and present it in a way that makes it look scary or does it justice. Because it's quite difficult, you know. Going somewhere alone and walking through an abandoned tunnel is scary, but filming it and then trying to make it look scary on camera, in video, it's more difficult than you think. But it's a challenge that I enjoy. And it's a challenge that basically involves sticking on a scary soundtrack. In fact, that's all you need to do. Giving you the secrets.
That nice bang that you sometimes put in.
There you go. But keep the stories, questions, comments coming in to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week to do it all over again. But for now, guys, as always, many thanks for listening. And we will see you next week. But for now, have a good one.
Was a Stakhanov production.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.